Blog Talk Radio.
Find out life's a game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game. Every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch.
There you go, and good evening all, and welcome into another Fred House Sports' Red Zone Blitz. Coming to you here on a Tuesday evening, January 12th, and we've been waiting for it for a long, long time. Holy smokes, we have got one heck of a snow squall going on here at Fred House Sports right now. The wind is howling, and the snow is falling like you wouldn't believe here for at least for a couple of minutes. That's all we're anticipating, though. That's all they're saying. Just a little bit of a dusting as something moves through real, real fast. It's always amazing to me when it does that. That's truly cool. Anyhow, we're going to be getting into a little bit of chat here on what happened this past weekend in the NFL, first weekend in the NFL playoff season for 2015. And you're going to find out here in a couple of moments as we go through things. There's quite a bit of unusual stuff that took place. Particularly, I mean, you know, when you first take a look at we're going to take a look at that Kansas City and Houston game, and you look at it on first blush, 30-0, you say, well, what? There's a lot of interesting stuff that came out of that game. There were a lot of things that happened that resulted out of that game that hadn't happened in the NFL in a long, long time. In other words, we had some records tied or records broken, you know, that sort of thing, in that particular game. It's absolutely amazing when I go through some of the firsts on that particular game, which one would look at and think, well, this was a yawner, right? We're going to get into that one. Of course, there were only four games this past weekend. We've got that one. We've got the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Cincinnati Bengals. Boy, did that get nasty. We're going to talk about it. Seattle Seahawks and Minnesota Vikings. Man, did that one get cold. We're going to talk about it. And then the Green Bay Packers and the Washington Redskins. Man, did that one go to the Packers real quick. Washington Redskins started out with that one with an 11-0 lead, early 11-0 lead in that game. And well, no, it didn't go their way. Interesting phenomenon when you take a look at it. Let me just bring it up right at the top of the program. One of the interesting things that occurred out of this past weekend that I can't remember saying, I can never necessarily point to a specific time that I remember this one happening, even in the first round. All four road teams won. All four road teams won, which means at this point right now, left in the mix of games that we've got right now, there are absolutely no 3 and 4 seeds remaining in what's left of the games that we have now. And, of course, now what do we have? We only have about 7 games left. But we're going to be going through everything that took place this past weekend in the wild card weekend, and we'll be taking a look at what's coming up as we go into the divisional round. Now just seven games remaining in the NFL season, with the seventh of those, of course, being Super Bowl 50. This show is here for you. If you guys want to jump in, please don't hesitate to do that. 347-826-9964. That's why we do it this way. That's why we get on the air and come to you live on Tuesday night, so that you guys can participate with us. 347-826-9964 is how you can get a hold of us on the phone. If you are listening on a computer and you are Skype capable, hit the Skype button next to the show information up there at the top. It should put you through to us loud and clear. Otherwise, you can leave a message for us in the Blog Talk Radio chat room, or I will be. You can hit me up over on Twitter. I'll be putting out our Twitter poll in a bit here as well, as I always do on Tuesday nights. But you can hit me up on Twitter at FratHouseMike. And as always, I will remind you all, I always am checking my Twitter notifications to see if anybody's in touch. As I was just pointing out, Brandon, this is Tuesday night thing, but we only have one more of these scheduled for this coming season. That will be next week. And then after that, we'll be coming to you here on special Sunday broadcasts. We'll get into a little bit of that as the time gets closer. But we've got tonight, we've got next week that we will be coming back and talking about the divisional rounds. And hard to believe, but that's going to be it for the Tuesday night productions of the Red Zone Blitz for this season. Hard to believe.
Yeah, it is a little hard to believe, but this happens every year with the NFL. The season goes by, you know, before you know it. I think that's why football is the most popular sport. It's not, you know, it's very short, the season. I mean, really, it's, you know, from September to basically the end of January. I mean, yeah, there might be a game in February, and there might be, you know, preseason starting in August, but you know, it's a pretty short season when you look at some of the, you know, all the rest of the professional leagues.
Nonetheless, the NFL seems to find a way to make itself relevant throughout the entire year. We know that from having been doing sports talk now here for almost 5 years.
They will fabricate stories if they have to.
If they have to, that's right. We know that one. Just to compete against something called baseball. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll get right into it. Let's get right into it, and we'll take a look at a couple of these games, and we'll start it off with that first AFC game that took place on Saturday afternoon. That one came to us, I think, at about 4:15 or so. It kicked off, and we had the Kansas City Chiefs ultimately took care of the Houston Texans without any difficulty at all, despite the fact they had to go to Houston, took care of them without any issue, 30-0. And I was alluding to some of the things that occurred in this game or occurred as a result of this game that had not happened either in a long, long time or had not happened at all before. Now, let's see if I got these right. As you recall, I was taking some notes during the games, and a couple of these are in my notes. First of all, the Texans were the first NFL team to make the playoffs, So this is a record setter. The Texans were the first NFL team to make the playoffs with four starting quarterbacks during the regular season. That's the first one. The end result score of 30-0, that was the first time that an NFL playoff game had ended in a shutout in 10 years. That's the second one. There was a special teams kickoff return for the Chiefs, 7-0. That was Niall Davis. Niall Davis had the kickoff return for a 7-0 lead, all right, right at the very, very, very beginning of the game. Kickoff return for the Chiefs lead was the first ever in the NFL playoffs, so that was the first time that's ever happened. And this Chiefs win, excuse me, this Chiefs win was the first in playoffs in the playoffs since this was their first win in the playoffs since Joe Montana beat the Houston Oilers in 1993. How do you like all of those? That's some next level. That's some next level stats right there. What do you think?
Yeah, that's for sure. you can always count on Fred Ass Mike to go for the stats. That's for sure.
Well, and the expert note taking that I was doing during the course of the game.
Well, yeah, you had a legal pad out there and going to town. That's for sure.
On every single game. Well, as I pointed out, it's a little bit easier to do when you get into these games because there's only four of them during the course of the weekend versus trying to do this for 16 games during the course of the weekend.
Oh, that would be impossible.
Yeah, that would be, you know, I would be tearing my hair out as well, you know. But, you know, when you go and you take a look at this game, and, you know, look, I give it to Houston. I was actually kind of rooting for Houston a little bit. You know, I viewed him as the underdog. I'd kind of been rooting for him. You know, I guess it was about three quarters of the way through the season. I was making the predicts that they were going to win the AFC South there, that they didn't have to worry about Indianapolis any longer. And I was kind of rooting for him a little bit. I really didn't think that they were going to win against Kansas City. I mean, we had all picked Kansas City last Thursday night on the Frat House Sports Show anyhow. But let's get it straight. In this game, this was a Brian Hoyer mess, Brandon. Brian Hoyer was 15 of 34, 136 yards. Now, so far, so good. I mean, not spectacular, but it's not horrible. That's not horrible. We've seen quarterbacks get those kind of stats before. Here's where it all goes wrong. No touchdowns, four interceptions, and Hoyer ended up with a passer rating of 15.9. I mean, this was a disaster that really, you know, and we're going to talk about the Minnesota and Seattle game here, you know, in a little bit. You know, there's Blair Walsh out there taking all of the blame for that loss in that game. Holy smokes, Brian Hoyer, I hope he got on television and asked for everyone's forgiveness, because four interceptions, that's what set this thing up. I mean, seriously, there's nothing else to blame for it but that.
Well, we've seen this before, though, especially in playoffs, where, you know, a bad start compounds itself. You know what I'm saying? In other words, like, they got behind, and then, you know, the Texans aren't really a team built to come from behind. They're a team, you know, that, you know, wants to play, you know, score for score and use the defense to try to keep it close. They get behind in a hole, you know, and they're trying to pass their way out of it, essentially. You know, it puts a lot of pressure on, you know, Hoyer and the offense. It may not be, you know, they're not equipped for that kind of, you know, big play, let's get back in this game quickly kind of thing. And, you know, when they try to play that way because they don't have a choice, you're going to see the interceptions go up. And I don't want to take anything away from Kansas City's defense, which has been absolutely awesome all year. So, you know, you add those two things in the mix, you know, I think if the Houston Texans wanted to win this game, their game plan was probably let's score early and, you know, keep the defense in it. And clearly their plan didn't work.
mm-hmm.
You know, it's we've seen this happen before, you know, when a team, you know, we could have seen it in some of these other games, but we didn't. I mean, we sort of did, I think, in the Green Bay game. Although I will say the Redskins do have more weapons. But, you know, Green Bay kind of got out in front and then they just kind of put their foot on the Redskins' throat as they went down the fourth quarter. I mean, they just kind of, you know, it took them a while to get going, though. Anyway,
well, now,
yeah, I think that was Hoyer's issue. I don't, you know, it's hard to judge on one game like that.
Well, yeah, for sure. But, of course, as we know in football, that's the way it is. It's one and done.
No, sure.
You either win or you're gone.
Well,
but
yeah. They still had a pretty good season. You can't take away.
Oh, and I'm not. I'm not. Yeah. Trust me. You know, not me. I mean, like I said, I started out this conversation by saying I was kind of rooting for him.
Right, right.
And was putting up you know, comments over on our Frat House Sports Facebook page, even as of Saturday or early Saturday, saying, you know, pointing out some of the things that the Texans had shown that they're very good at this past season, and saying to folks, you know, listen, this team could come out and surprise people. They could come out and surprise people. You know, it wouldn't have shocked me had the Texans won it. Now, you know, talking about the 30-0 game, you would think, you would have thought that this was just a dominant performance by the Kansas City Chiefs. Well, in fact, it really wasn't, Brandon, because the offense for Kansas City, they didn't put up any points on the board for the offense at all until about 10 minutes into the third quarter. That's when the offense really got on the board. Up to that point, it had been the Nile Davis special team kickoff return. excuse me. And then punt is what it was. So it took until about 10 minutes into the third quarter before the offense actually got them on the board. I just wanted to pull up Alex Smith's numbers. Alex Smith, typical Alex Smith. I mean, the guy does just enough to get this team by. 17-22, 190 yards, one touchdown, one interception, and 98.7 passer rating. How far realistically can this team go? This is not an offense. It hasn't been. This is not an offensive juggernaut sort of team. This is a team that appears to live off of its defense. It's a team that particularly last season lived off of Charles and seemingly has been able to compensate for his loss this year. I don't know how, but seemingly they've been able to do that. I mean, they got to go in, and they're going to be playing. Who do they play? They play the Patriots.
New England.
Yep. Yeah, they play the Patriots next. I mean, what do you make of the lack of offense on this team, and how that potentially might match up against the Patriots?
Well, I think it's a good matchup for the Patriots because the Patriots are getting some of their offensive weapons back, and some of the defensive linebackers are actually getting healthy too. So the Patriots are actually looking pretty good health-wise going into this game, short of their running back position. And I think this is the kind of team where they can compensate for that a little bit. However, I don't know that the Patriots can put up massive numbers against this defense. So, you know, having the other side, the Chiefs, not having a high-powered offense is probably going to be a good thing for the Patriots. Mm-hmm. In other words, I like the matchup. I like the way it matches up. I think the Patriots, you know, honestly, I think pretty much every one of the home teams, I think we could see a mirror opposite of what we saw this past week.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, I think you could see all the 5 and 6 seeds who moved on, I think you could see every one of them lose instead of win this week. And for various reasons. It's not that I don't want to take anything away from any of the teams, but as we go to them, you know, I'll point out what I think their issues is. And Kansas City's big issue right now might be the health of Jeremy Maclin. I mean, he's their best receiver, their biggest offensive weapon, per se. And, you know, he's working on a high ankle sprain.
Yep.
If he plays, he may not play well. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, others of these 5 and 6 teams are also dealing with similar issues where, you know, some of their key guys may not be the healthiest.
We'll talk about Ben Roethlisberger here momentarily. Yeah.
Well, and Antonio Brown. I mean, there's a couple on that Pittsburgh side that are pretty wounded.
Yep.
So I think what it comes down to is we just may see the exact opposite. You know, and I don't want to take away from what any of these teams did, because, like you said, this was historic. We never had every one of the visiting teams win in a wild card weekend. Never. So, you know, that's pretty cool, actually, when you think about it.
I thought it was, yeah. I mean, I didn't have a problem with it. I really didn't. I didn't have a problem with it. I thought it was actually kind of neat. It is kind of odd when I look down and I'm looking at the matchups and they're all lined up for this coming Saturday and Sunday, and you don't see any three or four seeds. That really is weird. You know, that's strange looking to me. But
well, that's what we got. I mean, that's the way it unfolded. I mean, here's what you gotta remember, and we knew this going in. There were a lot of teams in the NFL who had really good records, you know, as the season was going, and there was a lot of, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of middle of the road. It was either really good or really bad. So you ended up with teams, you know, in the wild card positions because there were teams above them in their division that just had that good of a record. So, you know, that inspired some of these other teams. I mean, Seattle as a wild card. Well, Arizona was better.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean,
you had two. The big issue really was you had 2-9-7 division winners.
Well, yeah, that too. That doesn't.
The
Houston Texans, you know,
and the Washington Redskins.
You had some really strong divisions out there with two good teams at the top. One of them had to be a wild card, and that's just. I think that's why you saw what you saw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Cincinnati and Pittsburgh. I mean, I think going into the game, into the postseason, Pittsburgh was the scariest team. They don't scare me quite so much right now, but, you know, they were going into the playoffs. Boy, that was the one team I didn't want to see. You know, I didn't want my team to have to play that team.
Well, now, let me ask you this, though. Do we now? I mean, you know, one of the things I want to throw some props at, not because I'm a big fan, but I want to throw props to Big Red. I mean, Andy Reid, I think, has done a phenomenal job. Holy smokes, this Kansas City team is on an 11-game winning streak, Brennan. That is unheard of, 11 games in a row. That doesn't happen in the NFL. I mean, you know, and I know some people will say, well, Mike, what are you talking about? Carolina just, all right, Carolina. I'm going to tell you right now, I would venture a bet that pound for pound, Kansas City has had a tougher schedule in the 11 games that they've had to play than Carolina did in, what was it, their 14 or 15 in a row, 14 in a row. That's just my you know, eye test on it. I'd have to go look at each schedule individually. But I got to throw props to Andy Reid. That's number one. That's an incredible situation. But number two, I bring it back again. And while you're saying that we might see the home teams all switching things up, my suspicion is you're not looking at Kansas City going it, taking it any further than where they are right now.
Me? Are you saying me or in general?
No, I'm asking. Yeah, I'm asking you.
No, I do not. I really like the matchup, you know, with the Chiefs and the Patriots. I think we were talking about it a little bit as the games were going on last weekend, and, you know, I really liked the way it matched up. I didn't want to necessarily see Pittsburgh because, like I said, they had scared me. But I think Denver might have caught a break based on the fact that Pittsburgh had to play a division rival and had a slugfest of a game. So, you know, right now I kind of like, you know, I'm kind of leaning towards all the, you know, the home teams this week for various reasons.
So even with an 11-game winning streak, you would not put the Chiefs in as one of the remaining scary teams, in other words?
No, especially with Macklin hurt. I think Macklin hurt is kind of like their final, you know, hurrah, as they say. I mean, you lose, take him out of that offense, and that offense, which is already struggling, is even worse. So, you know, with him playing on a high ankle sprain, I really don't like the Chiefs' chances. I'm not going to say it's not going to be a tough game. It could even be a close game that goes down to the fourth quarter. You know what I'm saying? The Chiefs' defense is certainly capable of keeping in. It could be a very low scoring game. As the Patriots, let's get it straight, without, they don't really have a true running game right now. I mean, they got pieces, you know, that can do a little bit. I mean, James White never impressed me. Steven Jackson sort of looked okay considering he hadn't been playing all year, but they don't have, you know, what they had earlier in the year with Deion Lewis and LeGarrette Blount. They just, you know, it's just not there. So they're going to be pretty one-dimensional. Now they are going to get, you know, some health back. I've heard Julian Edelman's good and ready to go full throttle. Amendola was nursing a knee. He had a week off to get a little better. You know, Gronk's healthy. You know, the rest of the Patriots are good, and they may even be getting a lineman or two, you know, on the offense a little more healthy, so maybe Brady won't be running for his life. So they may be able to do a little more on the offense than they have been the last couple weeks of the season. So, yeah, I'll add all that up. I don't like the Chiefs' chances, to be honest with you.
I'm assuming we are led to believe at the moment that Macklin is going to do everything he possibly can to play. But,
oh, yeah,
as you say, even in the lineup, he's probably going to be somewhat limited. And now this becomes somewhat more one, two-dimensional, perhaps. Because Charcandrick West really all of a sudden has dropped off the face of the earth and has been replaced by Spencer Ware. Spencer Ware has become the Chiefs' almost seemingly number one running back. And the only other weapon that Alex Smith has then to throw to, really there after the fact, has been Travis Kelce, who had himself 8 receptions last week for 128 yards. Now it becomes a little bit more of a somewhat more obvious defensive game for the New England Patriots. So,
yeah, I would agree. You know, nobody's not nursing injuries at this point. But as we've seen before, you know, if you have, and it's why they play so hard to get them. If you're one of the one or two seeds and you have that extra week to get a little healthy, especially if your opponent gets a little more unhealthy the week before, it's a clear advantage. That's why the NFL, you know, the teams really fight to get those top seeds and get the bye. I mean, the bye, you know, is clearly going to help. You know, it's helping New England. I think it's helping Denver get a little healthier. I don't know that Carolina was really, you know, waiting for anybody to get healthy. And I think Arizona's been pretty healthy, you know, as far as their key guys. But, you know, it's definitely going to help some, that's for sure. And it doesn't hurt that when your opponent has the kind of game like a Pittsburgh and Cincinnati had. I mean, you know, I don't even know how, honestly, I'm curious how well Seattle came out of that Viking game. Not saying it wasn't a chippy game, but it was played in awful, awful cold weather. And awful cold weather generally means you hit harder, you get more bumps, you get more bruises.
Yeah, it's going to sting a little longer, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Right, right. That's kind of what I'm thinking, you know, from the Vikings point of view, or the Seahawks point of view. So, you know, it's clearly an advantage for the teams that were on a bye last week.
You would think, for sure. Although you're talking about Arizona, and I'm just, I thought that, didn't they have an issue with one of their running backs?
Well,
dinged up?
They lost Chris Johnson till, the only way I think Chris Johnson can play is
that's what
the
I'm
Super Bowl.
Of. That's what it is. That's
they put
what
him on the IR designated to return, but to get to the 8 weeks or whatever that is, he has to, the only game he's eligible to come back for would be the Super Bowl.
Right,
they got the other Johnson, David Johnson, and Andre Ellington. Ellington was a little banged up, but I think, you know, having the extra bye week might help them a little bit. They weren't using Ellington as a feature back, even, you know,
no,
with Chris Hurt, though. They kind of switched over to the David Johnson. I think he's either a rookie or a second year player. He's relatively young, so that's why he was the third and kind of went up to one. I think they like Ellington in their limited role that they use him as, you know, a third down back and when they need, you know, the receiving back. So I think history's proven, though, Ellington really can't take the wear and tear of being the every down back. I mean, we saw last year they tried it and he was out a couple times with injury. So I think it's all done in the effort, you know, for the overall good. You know what I mean?
Gotcha. If anybody wants to jump in with us, please, don't hesitate. We're here for about the next hour or so, a little bit less than that. 347-826-9964. We're going over what happened this past weekend in the wild card matchups in the NFL. And, well, as we do that, we're kind of blending in a little bit what some of the upcoming games are going to be here this coming week as we go into the divisional round. 347-826-9964. Otherwise, you can leave us a message in the Blog Talk Radio chat room. Or just momentarily here. In fact, why don't I do it right now? Because we're going to jump over. We're going to take a look at the second Saturday game, and that was the second AFC game that took place, where we had the Pittsburgh Steelers going to Cincinnati. And Pittsburgh Steelers came out of that one 18-16. We already know that the Steelers are going to be heading to play Denver and play the Broncos on Sunday, and that will be the second game on Sunday. That'll be the 4:40 game. So my Frat House Sports Red Zone Blitz poll question, Twitter poll question for this evening is, who wins the NFL-AFC matchup between the Steelers and the Broncos? Who wins that one? Steelers or Broncos? Call in. Because that game suddenly has taken on a little bit more of a twist in it. And we'll talk about that here momentarily. We've already alluded to it. So you can hit me up over on Twitter, at Frat House Mike, and you can catch up with my Frat House Sports' Red Zone Blitz NFL poll for the evening. Who wins the NFL-AFC Steelers-Broncos game? Yes, and you can answer that question over at Frat House Mike. Okay, now, this... I don't know what to say about this game, Brandon, and we've had a whole load of fallout from it since it concluded on Saturday night. We knew it was going to be special. I think the referees did as well. Knew it was going to be special when, for gosh sakes, they were handing out stern warnings to both sides. Even before the first snap. But you saw the video there. What did they have, like a 10 or 20-yard neutral zone set up while the two teams were taking warm-ups in either end, warning both teams, don't you dare enter. No player shall enter into this area at all during warm-ups.
The refs were like standing guard. You never
exactly.
seen that.
Exactly. And as it ended up, boy, it got nasty. It got chippy. Let's put it this way. I mean, we know it already now. It got fined. It got suspended. We've listen, I'm still reading about all the fallout from to Burfick. He now has a $50,000 fine for another hit, let alone his 3-game suspension that he's got to open the season with next season.
Up to two Steelers coaches could still be getting fined. They have not announced that yet, you know, for different issues.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have just players. You have players and coaches.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, this whole game just, I mean, and, you know, in some respects, while you like to see two competitive teams come at it, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. As it continued to go through, particularly the fourth quarter, it became somewhat dismaying to fans who wanted to see a good game, because it was evident that what was happening was it was beginning to spiral out of control. I mean, right up to the extent that who was it that I heard today? John Clayton from over at ESPN. I mean, described it in his opinion. He described it as the biggest choke game that he has ever seen in the NFL.
I would almost agree with that. I've never seen a game melt down so much as that game.
Cincinnati had this game won with about a minute 30 left in the game,
yep.
And they lost it. They lost this game on personal fouls and penalties. That's what they lost it on. And in my in my notes, in my own personal notes from the game, over in the very top in the corner, in the side margin, game is a perfect example of how to beat yourself. Is the first thing I wrote, and I don't know if there's anything more to say about it. I mean, after that, because this game was won by Cincinnati. Now, you wouldn't think that was the case early on in the game, because all of Cincinnati's points came in the fourth quarter. Cincinnati was blanked off of the board until the third quarter. It was 6-0 at the half for Pittsburgh. It was 15-0 at the end of the third quarter for Pittsburgh. And Cincinnati put up all their points in the fourth quarter. Game ended up 18-16 on that field goal by the Pittsburgh Steelers, thanks to all the personal foul penalties that put the Steelers into field goal range. I mean, in so many respects, this game was a disgrace. Now, there have been calls for Marvin Lewis's head on this one, and I want to get your opinion on that for a couple of reasons, because, you know, look, not only does it appear that perhaps maybe, I mean, I know people always like to turn to when something like this happens. People love to turn and point fingers at the coach and say, well, it was the coach's fault. He lost control of the game. But there's also something else you can point to in the case of Marvin Lewis. And that is that this is the seventh straight playoff loss for the Cincinnati Bengals under Marvin Lewis. They have never advanced in any game. Seven straight losses in the playoffs. I almost think that that's a bigger deal than the fact he may have lost control of this game. I wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Well, yeah, it is. But it's real tough to throw that up there when you don't have your starting quarterback. You know, understand what I'm saying? In other words, like,
Brandon,
you're playing with
the game. They had the game won. You just admitted
it. I agree. But you know, and look, we may not be done hearing, you know, about this, and this may end up being, you know, something that costs Marvin Lewis his job down the road, or even, you know, we may, you know, I don't know. I haven't heard that, you know, it's in jeopardy at this point, his job, but, you know, the way that game ended, somebody should be held accountable. I agree with you. I just don't know, you know, if it's going to be Marvin Lewis or not, because here's the thing. The team was awesome for, you know, up until Dalton got hurt. A lot of people thought they were going to be the best team in the playoffs.
Yep.
So do you have a better option out there at quarterback or at head coach rather at this point? I don't know. I mean, well, you got to do what's best for the franchise if you're the owner, correct?
Yeah.
So I think it's hard to I get that you want to hold somebody accountable, and his record in the playoffs hasn't been great. But, you know, if they'd have come into the playoffs the way they were playing, you know, from like week 12, you know, that was probably the best team in football at that
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
even though they had lost and Carolina was undefeated, I think they would still be, you know, considered the best team, you know, going at that point.
Well, okay.
I don't know. It's a tough call.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, you know, it goes to that whole old argument or that old conversation, not an argument, but I guess conversation, debate. You know, does the coach make the quarterback or does the quarterback make the coach? Because you're right. Cincinnati has been tremendous this year. Andy Dalton has had a season like we've never seen from Andy Dalton before. So the question becomes, if the only head coach that Andy Dalton has ever known has been Marvin Lewis, well, was it that Marvin Lewis suddenly turned the switch on for Andy Dalton, or did Andy Dalton do it on his own and Marvin Lewis is just coming along for the ride? You hear what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, Marvin Lewis has been a good coach in the league. I mean, I don't he this question about his job has come up a couple times. I will say that. It comes down to, you know, is there a better option out there? And I think the answer to that question right now is no. If I'm a Cincinnati Bengal fan, I do not want to see my head coach removed at this point in time. You know, I think they got a good thing going right there. Burkett, I wouldn't mind seeing cut. I'll be honest with you there. Mm-hmm. I think his actions led to the second actions of Adam Jones and, you know, 30 yards of penalties at the end, which ended up costing the game.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, I think they were pretty much in jeopardy just on Burkett's penalty alone, you know, not counting the extra 15. The extra 15 made it a chip shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's not like Vontaze Burfict doesn't have priors. We already know
right.
that he does.
And you could see Marvin Lewis talking to him and trying to get through his thick head that, hey, you can't do this. We need this. This can't be right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, clearly the message went in one ear and out the other.
Yeah. You know, this was the scenario that, if you recall, I was bringing up, two to three weeks ago. You know, here is perhaps Cincinnati, one of the best teams in the entire NFL, the entire season. You lose Andy Dalton. They don't get the first round bye. Now they have to play that wild card weekend. And now, because of all of that, you could potentially see one of the best teams in the NFL getting knocked out in the first round. As it turned out, though, it wasn't going to go that way. Cincinnati was going to win this game, except for the fact that a couple of their players got stupid. I mean, let's get it straight, got stupid. So.
I think it kind of compounded itself. I mean,
let's get it straight.
I mean, the hit to Brown started it, you know, and then we had players and coaches on the field, and then it just got out of control. I don't know how all these people were allowed on the field, and you know, I guess it's hard to blame the refs. I mean, the refs certainly. It looked like their intention was right to get this game, keep this game under control. But, you know, it didn't kind of work out that way when it was all said and done.
Yeah. Well, let's get over and instead of concentrating on the loser, let's concentrate a little bit here for a moment on the winner, and that was Pittsburgh Steelers, who now advance and will end up playing, as I pointed out, that last game on Sunday. That'll be the 4:40 game on Sunday. They got to travel to Denver to play the number one seed in the AFC. And as you pointed out, suddenly this game is starting to look like, oh, man alive. I mean, could Denver be asking for really a better setup? I mean, Ben Roethlisberger now has indicated that on top of, I think he says he's got a bruised ACL and he's got issues with the shoulder. So
What he has is a bruised AC joint in his shoulder. That's the shoulder joint. And torn ligaments in his shoulder. Yes. He has two problems with the same shoulder.
Okay, so it's two. Okay, all right. So I was in the right church, wrong pew. He does have two issues. He just, I got you.
Yeah. His knees are about as good as they've been. But the guy can't, let's put it this way. We were watching the game. He couldn't throw 10 yards down the field.
Well, and that's what they're saying. He says he's going to play. I would think Pittsburgh's going to, you know, Landry Jones came in this game, ultimately, into the wild card game. But obviously, I think the Steelers are anticipating that Roethlisberger's going to start somehow or another. It was John Clayton this afternoon who I was hearing on the local radio station here who was being interviewed for ESPN and got talking about the whole situation with Ben Roethlisberger and said, consider for a moment that, in fact, Peyton Manning might actually be able to throw the ball further down the field than Ben Roethlisberger will on Sunday.
Yeah.
Now, we're either in for a very low-scoring game, so play the under, or this could get seriously slanted in favor of Denver. I haven't looked at any of the lines yet, and I generally try not to unless I'm actually absolutely forced to. I try not to until about midweek, but so I have no idea who's favored in this game. My suspicion would be that Denver is favored. And then you bring up the issue with Williams. Do you have an update on Williams?
Williams? You mean Brown?
Who am I? Antonio Brown. Okay, is that who we're missing?
Antonio Brown is in the concussion protocol from the hit.
Okay, all right, that's who it is, yes.
And D'Angelo Williams went and saw a foot specialist. I don't think his odds of playing are really good at this moment in time. We'll have to wait and see how that plays out. But, you know, right now I wouldn't be counting on seeing D'Angelo Williams. But, you know, with Antonio Brown, we don't know. We'll just have to wait and see. I mean, it's, the whole concussion thing is it's different for sure in the NFL this year, the way the concussions are going. Some guys come back, you know, the first week after. Other guys, you know, sit out 2-3 weeks. So I don't think Brown's had another one this year, so that may be in his favor. But, mm-hmm. I'm not sure how it's going to play out. That's for sure. We'll have to wait and see. It's going to be one of those wait-and-see games for Pittsburgh. I mean, what's Ben going to be able to do? What's Brown's status?
If he can't throw for more than 10 yards down the field, let's just say, and you don't have – oh, my gosh. You don't have D'Angelo Williams, okay, I'm just checking on that right now. They're saying right now NFL.com as of yesterday was saying he could sit Sunday. He could sit. So they were still leaving some – doubt on that, but then ESPN also reporting that he's seeing a foot specialist, so we don't know what his status is going to be. But then you're also missing then Antonio Brown. I mean, where in the world are they going to? You got Fitzgerald Toussaint, you got Martavius Bryant, you got Marcus Wheaton, you got Heath Miller. That's about it, right?
Yeah, but they got some pretty good weapons. Their receiving core is pretty deep. They had a couple good, receivers this year. Heath Miller, I think, if anything, he hasn't been a factor this year. So, maybe he'll be able to step up and help them. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is for the Pittsburgh Steelers right now. I think they're in an unenviable position of, they got a lot of guys hurt. Their top two running backs are already on the shelf. There's just not a whole lot of positives in their column right now.
And this
is
a game that's not dissimilar to what we just got there talking about with Cincinnati, from the standpoint that it couldn't line up much worse. I guess the only thing that would really, I don't know, would it be worse? I don't know. See, I'm going to ask you this question in a second here, but the Steelers coming in, if they're coming in with a healthy Ben Roethlisberger, this is a game, in my opinion, where you have no idea which Peyton Manning is going to go out there on the field. I know a lot of people are going, well, wait a minute, come on, calm down, he's going to be okay. Yeah, me, Brandon, I'm not sold on it. I don't know if I'm Denver Broncos management, I'm not sure if I'm starting them. But forget what the Denver Broncos do. Go back to right now what Pittsburgh really seriously should do. Wouldn't Landry Jones be a better option at this point?
Well, here's the way it's going to go. Pittsburgh's going to say all the right things. They're going to say Ben's our guy. If Sunday comes and Ben can't throw 10-15 yards down the field, I think you'll see Landry Jones. I don't think you can play a guy who's, you know, so limited. I mean, we saw, you know, we saw Peyton when he was struggling with throwing the ball downfield, how that offense struggled. Pittsburgh doesn't even really have key running backs. Although I will say this, their third and fourth guys didn't do a bad job, you know, given the circumstance, but they don't have a horse back there. You know, they don't have, you know, D'Angelo Williams or Le'Veon Bell like they had earlier in the year. So they got to compensate for it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't think they can afford, you know, you're already down at that position, and now you're going to have a quarterback that can't throw down the field. I don't, you know, I think you're going to see either Ben's healthier than we think he is and can
right.
throw more effectively, or I think you might just see Landry Jones. But, you know, they're gonna say, and Denver's already come out, Kubiak's come out today and said, we're planning on as if Ben's playing. Well, I don't know if I'd necessarily do that. I think I'd hedge my bet. Although I don't think Landry Jones is a big game plan difference from Ben. They're very similar in their styles. It's like not like either one of them's a super huge threat to run down the field or anything. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you're basically playing for a drop back passer. Clearly, Roethlisberger's a better passer. His history shows that. But Landry Jones has showed some promise. I wouldn't totally discount what he's done. I mean, he surpassed Michael Vick on the depth chart.
Well,
right, Vick doesn't even dress.
And that's my point. That's my point. I mean, when you consider all those games that Pittsburgh lost, but all the games that Roethlisberger lost when he was out with the foot injury, and
mm-hmm.
you know, consider how many times Pittsburgh Steelers fans have whispered to themselves this season. Oh, the season's over. The season's over. The season's over. Le'Veon Bell goes down. That was the first time they whispered it. The second time was when Roethlisberger went down. So, you know, they've managed to duct tape this thing together somehow or another to get themselves into the divisional round of playoffs. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. If I don't have 100% confidence, I'll take that back. If I don't have 75% confidence in my starting quarterback, I'm starting Landry Jones. The kid's been serviceable. He got my team to where it needed to be when it needed to be there. And I'm going up against a Denver Broncos team that, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't have 100% confidence that Peyton Manning is going to be the Peyton Manning that we've known in the past. In fact, I don't think he's going to be at all.
No, I would agree with you. I would agree with that. I think Peyton's a little bit of an unknown. He looked pretty good when he came in that last regular season game. I will say that. I mean, he didn't throw much. He was just mostly, for the most part, handing off. But when he did have to throw, he didn't look like – the ball didn't look like it was – you know, he had a little zip on it again, which, you know, could be good, you know, for him to make a little playoff run here.
Mm.
Excuse me. Sorry about that. But as far as Ben goes, you know, Ben and Landry Jones, if Ben can't throw, you know, that downfield, you got to go with Landry Jones. I think you're doing a disservice, you know, or maybe a combination of both. You know, I don't know. I don't know how effective Ben can be in that role. I mean, we saw him come back in after he got hurt, and we saw what he could do, which was next to nothing. If it wouldn't have been for them penalties, you know, the play that Antonio Brown got hurt on, you know, was a deep pass, and Ben went over the sidelines reportedly and told, he's like, I can't do that. Don't call that anymore. You know, he's sitting there telling the offensive coordinator, you know, you can't call that play. I can't throw that.
Mm-hmm.
And then luckily for him, the Bengals, you know, self-destructed. And, you know, they
yeah.
had the two penalties and put him in position. Well, the yeah. one penalty resulted from that throw. I mean, that throw that perfect, you know, hit Brown on, you know, was the throw. So, you know, I guess he did what he had to do. You know, I don't think he wanted to lose Antonio Brown in the process, but, you know, they managed to get, you know, what they needed to get the game won.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's a bigger miracle. I mean, you know, you got Rex Ryan and his Buffalo Bills beating his old team to get him into the playoffs the week before, or the most epic meltdown in football history that cost a team that should have been able to go really deep into the playoffs to go home.
Yeah, I mean, really.
Think about that. Think about Pittsburgh's luck the last 2 weeks, you know? They had no control of their own destiny going into the playoffs. They managed to get in, and now they managed to win. And
yeah.
Now they're going to Denver with, you know, half their offense hurt.
Right, and you know, the funny thing is you're saying consider their luck. I'm looking at it today, being a bit of the fatalist that I am a little bit at times, and looking at it and saying, boy, look at the luck that the Broncos got. Because you know, I'm reading the health report on Ben Roethlisberger, and I'm saying, boy, this couldn't work out better for the Broncos, because you don't know what you're going to see from Peyton Manning. You and I differ on whether it should be Peyton even starting the game to begin with. Nonetheless, he's had the week off. He's had the week off because he had the bye week. So I guess we'll see where it goes. And look, here's the bottom line. If he starts and he absolutely sucks it up, well, then you're pulling him out. That's what you're doing. And you can easily go to Brock Osweiler. That's what you do.
Well, don't forget, Brock Osweiler got a little dinged up in that last game. They said he would have been questionable to even suit up had they had a play last weekend. You know, he had a little bit of a knee injury from that game. So, you know. He's not 100. He wasn't 100% healthy, you know, at the end of the regular season. So, you know, they said he should be okay for the playoffs, you know, as a backup. But I don't know how much I'd be banking on him coming in and saving the day, kind of thing. I guess is where I'm going.
I hear you. I don't know.
I clearly think right now Peyton's the best choice for Denver.
Well,
I think his experience. I think his, you know, this is the kind of luck he had the year they went to and won the Super Bowl, where they kept getting matched up against teams that were, you know, far not equal to them, and they had, you know, issues of their own they were dealing with on the other side. You know, so far this is lining up good for Peyton to make a little run, and you know, if this goes. You know, let's just say it goes to chalk and the one and the two win. I don't know that I like New England's chances going in there, you know, with that defense that Denver has with no running game, you know, on the Patriots side. I don't know if I like my chances. I'll be honest with you.
That is just, oh boy.
That could set up an epic Peyton Brady, show, you know, possibly final showdown in an AFC title game. Could you imagine the hype in that game?
Oh, boy.
I mean, because, you know, nobody's for sure what Peyton's doing next year. I mean, there's been all kind of speculation that maybe he wants to play one more. Maybe he should just, you know, go out on the high note of, you know, whatever high note they finish on, if they finish, you know, whatever.
You're telling me there might be one more chance I'm going to get to wear my orange 18, huh?
I think you certainly have a chance to wear it Sunday, I would imagine.
We'll see.
I'd be a little disappointed if you don't put that on.
Oh, really, really? All right. Well, I was actually going to pass, but because I just need to feel a little more confident than I do about him. But we'll see. We'll play that one by ear. That's the last game on Sunday. That's the last game on Sunday, so I got plenty of time to make up my mind on that one.
I'll tell you what. If Kansas City does upset New England and Kansas City has to go into Denver, I like Kansas City's chances a little better than I like New England.
Oh, boy. Now we got a divisional matchup. Oof,
yep.
Wow. All right. Well, all right. Let's.
Trust me, I don't want to see that, obviously, as a Patriots fan, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, the more compelling matchup certainly would be Denver and the Patriots, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we got about 30 minutes here. If anybody wants to jump in, hey, don't hesitate. Just pick up the phone, 347-826-9964. We're just simply reliving everything that took place this past Saturday and Sunday in the wildcard games. We got two more games to go through here in the next couple of moments, in the next 30 minutes. And that shouldn't be difficult because one of these games didn't have too much scoring. But 347-826-9964. Otherwise, you can leave us a message in the Blog Talk Radio chat room, or you can hit me up over on Twitter at Frat House Mike, where we do have the Twitter poll question of the evening running as well. And that is, what did I say it was? Who will win between the Steelers and the Broncos game this coming Sunday? Who will win that one? You can find that question over at Frat House Mike.
That's a tough question to answer right now, really, if you think about it. We don't know the status of Antonio Brown. We don't know what Roethlisberger is going to be like. I mean, those are – I'd be curious. I don't know if you've checked the lines yet, but how Vegas is looking at this
team.
I'm
trying to hold off.
Yeah, you're trying to hold off? Because I wouldn't be surprised if this game's actually off the board till they get a clearer picture of who can play and who's not going to play. You know, that's a tough game to handicap without, you know, what a lot of people are considering the top receiver in football and one of the best starting quarterbacks.
All right.
So, yeah.
Now you got my curiosity.
Now I'm making them. Sorry.
All right, let's see what we got here. Whoa! Denver is a 6.5-point favorite. Holy smokes.
That line's telling me they're not expecting much from Ben or Brown at this moment.
It's got the lowest over under 39.5.
Wow, that's a little surprising.
Arizona Green Bay has, just by comparison, Arizona Green Bay, the over under on that game is 50. But the over under on Denver Pittsburgh is 39.5.
What's New England Chiefs over under? I can't. That's not much more.
Here we go. Yeah, as you suspected, all of the home games are favored this week, according to the current lines. New England is a 5-point favorite over Kansas City. 42.5 is the over/under. Arizona is a 7-point favorite over Green Bay. Over/under on that 50. Carolina is a mere 3-point favorite. That's a standard home favorite over Seattle, over/under on that 44. Ooh, I could see that line moving a little bit to Seattle's way in the next day or two. Watch. You watch. That line's going to drop by Thursday. I'll bet you it's at 2 for Carolina. How much you want to bet?
Wow. Well, Seattle does seem to be getting a lot of love. That's for sure. I mean, you know, you got to think their luck's going to run out at some point. I mean, talk about luck. I mean, you had one of the best kickers in football miss a 27-yard chip shot to win the game. I mean, there was some weird finishes to some of these games. I'm not saying that was, you know, one player, but, you know, between the Bengals loss and then that game. Oof.
Well, what do you say we get over and take a look at that game? And that was
that
was the early game on Sunday. Seattle Seahawks, I'm telling you, there's a whole load of them that just, you know, I'm sure they said a whole load of prayers after that one was done because there's no way they should have won it. But they ended up pulling one out 10-9. 10-9 over Minnesota. Wind chill at the beginning of the game was minus 25. Temperature was minus 6. In what I think they had recorded as what being the third coldest game, I think, ever in NFL history that had to be played. It was evident, Brandon, that the weather played a factor in this game. Very, very evident. It was evident in the kicking game. It was evident as well, though, in the passing game. Russell Wilson only completed 13 passes the entire day. 13 to 26 for 142. Over on the other side, Teddy Bridgewater only completed 17 passes all day long. So between the two teams, you only saw 30 completed passes. 17 to 24 was Teddy Bridgewater for 146 yards. The Minnesota Vikings obviously never scored a touchdown at all. Everything was field goals. They had three field goals. I believe there was one touchdown by Seattle, but they missed the extra point. So, am I right on that one? I thought I was. I have to check on the stats on that one.
I think that sounds about right. Yeah.
Now that would be wrong. They must have made the extra point. Because that would make because they had 10 points, right?
But
nonetheless, this was a. I mean, you know, I was reading people putting up comments on Facebook and what have you, friends of mine and other sports types. Boy, this is a really bad game. This is really boring. Boy, it's really. I'm going to be honest with you. Brandon, you may have found it to be a little bit dull. I don't know. I didn't. I'll tell you what I found about, and maybe it's just me. Maybe it's because I don't mind defensive games. What I found it to be was I found it to be a weather-induced game. You go into this one knowing that it's not going to be spectacular. You are not going to see, blazing 45-yard airstrikes down the right side of the field. Get that out of your mind. It's not going to happen. Everything is going to be very, very difficult. You know, every yard you get is going to be you're going to have to fight for. And I was okay with this game. Of course, the most amazing part of it, I suppose, as you pointed out, was the 27-yard failed field goal attempt by Blair Walsh with just 27 seconds remaining in the game. Which would have that would have secured the game for them. They would have won the game at that point, then 12-10. But the kick went so far wide left, and apparently it was a bad snap, where it just couldn't get lined up correctly. Apparently, way it went. I mean, it was a heartbreaker. We, you and I both sat there thinking, okay, this is it. Minnesota's advancing.
I thought it was over, for sure. I mean, that game, you don't expect. I mean, Blair Walsh was kicking, you know, 40, 45-yard field goals in that weather, you know, prior to that, you know, without an issue. So you wouldn't think that particular field goal would have been a problem for him at that point. But, you know.
Well, and
we saw the result.
It was interesting because I'm trying to remember. I believe it was in the I believe it was in the first quarter. It might have been in the first quarter, where you saw Pete Carroll didn't even take a chance putting Hauschka out for a 40-some yard field goal attempt, and yet we saw Blair Walsh doing it. We saw Blair Walsh doing it.
Repeatedly.
You know, yeah. And yet Seattle he wouldn't take the chance in the first quarter.
He did later in the game though.
He did, but and
Hauschka was dead on, so I mean the only bad kick we saw from a field goal kicker was that last one, really. Unfortunately, the one that mattered the most was, you know, a bad kick. I mean the laces were facing him, they had commented during the game, you know, the holder might have had issues getting the ball down, didn't have time to spin it because of, as you alluded to, maybe a snap was off or something. But, you know, whatever the case, even with all that, a 27-yard field goal, you wouldn't expect to not make that.
Yep.
You know, that's an extra point, an old extra point. Let's put it that way.
Well,
not
one
a
of the
current
things,
extra point.
One of the things I didn't expect was and I hear what you're saying, that, you know, Hauschka was making them later on then. In fact, he made a 46-yarder. Mm-hmm. He made a 46-yarder then later on in the fourth quarter. But I was surprised that Pete Carroll would make that call as early as he did in the first quarter. Here you are. You're within field goal range. It's fourth down, and he decides to punt. And I'm going, wait a minute. You could, you know, why not try for the – why not try for – It seemed to me that Pete Carroll did not have the and we're talking about Hauschka. I mean, you know, listen, he's no slouch, kicker either. I mean, you know, Blair Walsh, as you pointed out, is considered one of the best, and Hauschka himself is as well. I was a little
one
surprised.
One thing I will say on that is, and I do remember the announcers bringing this up. There was a wind.
You're
and the
right.
wind was worse from one direction to the other. So maybe that had a little play into that first call that you're alluding to. Maybe they would have been kicking into the wind and he didn't want to take the chance. And later in the game, you know, maybe the wind died down. Maybe the direction they were headed, you know, all that stuff sometimes does play into a coach's decisions as to whether to kick or not kick. So maybe that was part of it. And you know, earlier in the game, I don't know that it really ever really warmed up, but the game temperature did inch a little higher as it went. I don't know if that makes a big difference. I mean, one thing that you had pointed out to me that I wasn't aware of that you had, I guess you had saw pregame or whatever, is the warming of that field up there in Minnesota, that the field was actually at a constant 40 degrees. I mean, so at least, you know, that should have made things a little easier. You know, the kicker don't have to worry about planting on a rock solid, you know, turf with no traction.
Exactly.
You know, so that should have helped a little.
It was amazing when they were showing the technology for that field apparently can maintain a 40 degree temperature on top, even when the air temperature is 70 degrees below zero. I mean, that was insanity. So, I mean, that's pretty freaking awesome when you think about it.
I agree. Well, you know, that's pretty, yeah, especially when you're playing in, you know, below zero temperatures to start the game. You know, to have the field at least, you know, I think it keeps the field in a better position for, you know, the players, all players, not just the kickers. But, you know, we're talking about the kickers in this particular case. But, you know, I think it makes better for, you know, running backs cutting, receivers cutting, you know, that kind of thing, you know, when you have a constant track under you.
There were a couple of things that jumped out at me on this one. Brandon, I mean, apparently there were issues. Pete Carroll was saying that at halftime, he was indicating that apparently there were communication issues on the sideline with his personnel on the field, with those that have the microphones in their head, in their helmets, that there were issues there. But boy, oh boy, we saw an awful lot of timeouts being taken by Seattle in this game, simply because the clock was running down. I the only thing you can think of and point to is that perhaps maybe that was all weather related. I don't know. But it seemed to be affecting Seattle much more than Minnesota. We didn't see that kind of thing from Minnesota. It was much more apparent on the Seattle side.
We've seen this a couple of times with this wireless system the NFL has now, where when the weather's bad, they have issues. I mean, we've seen it, you know, up in New England. And, you know, of course, they want to then, you know, point the fingers at the Patriots right away. You know, but the NFL's come out and said it was their own system that's been the issue. And I think that we've seen this in a couple of weather-related games where, you know, it just maybe this wireless thing they're trying to do ain't the best option all the time. And, you know, I don't know if that's part of it, but, I mean, the cold weather certainly can't help the situation, you know what I mean?
So you're suggesting that perhaps maybe they go to the college issue where you throw up the pictures of the apples and the alligator.
Well, no, they all have, and I think they still have it as a backup. Remember the old days when they had the cable, and they always had some guy trailing the head coach who had the cable,
the headset.
The wired headsets. I think they're still what's the word? They're in the NFL as the backup method. So, you know, maybe that's something they should look at more in these bad weather games. Instead of going with that wireless one, try to just, you know, if you know you're going to have cold temperatures or rain or anything that could interfere with the wireless technology, then you go with the corded one.
Seattle is heading to Carolina, 1 o'clock game on Sunday. And, you know, obviously we want to – I'm not looking to give our picks away for Thursday night because we generally make our picks on the Frat House Sports Show. So I'm not looking to do that one. But we've already taken a look at the spread on this game so far, Brendan. Obviously, Vegas is giving both teams a lot of respect here. Carolina, 3-point favorite. Seattle, I'm telling you, I'm waiting. You wait and see. That line, I think, is going to move a little bit in Seattle's favor. This could be the closest game of the entire weekend.
You could be right. I mean, I think all these games this weekend, I don't think you're going to see a bad one. I like all the matchups. I think all the games are intriguing in their own way. You know what I mean? I think the Pittsburgh-Denver game, obviously, because of the banged-up Steelers, the New England game because of the, the matchup, I like the way the matchup is in that game. Arizona and Green Bay, that could end up being a shootout kind of game. We could see all kinds of games, you know, different games play out, and I like every one of the matchups. And I think the Seattle-Carolina game is going to end up being, you know, a battle of two good defense. You know, you got two really good defenses going up against each other here.
Mm-hmm.
Neither one of them are particularly explosive offenses, but they have their moments. Both quarterbacks are, you know, mobile and can create, you know, plays on their own and have all year, especially, you know, Cam. I mean, I don't know that Russell Wilson has run as much this year, but, you know, he's certainly capable. We've seen it in the past. So I think you're looking at, you know, a couple, you know, four really good games here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and this game should be, you know, I think they all have their, like I said, they all have their highs and their lows.
Oh, listen, make no mistake. I'm looking forward to it. I'm chomping at the bit. I wish it were tomorrow. All right, last but not least, let's get over and take a look real quick at the Green Bay Packers and the Washington Redskins game. Green Bay took this one down. It would appear if you just look at the box score and never saw the game, you would look at it and go, well, hey, not a problem. 35-18, the pack is back. Well, you know, hold on. Back up the bus for a moment because early on, you know, Brandon, I'm going to tell you something. I actually thought, well, Washington might have had something here. They might have been able to pull this one off. Let's start it off. I mean, early on, it was a safety by the Redskins. They sacked Rodgers in the end zone. That ended up getting them 2 points, plus they got the punt. And then they presented to march down the field following that punt. And it was only because of the Packers' D that held them at the goal line that forced the Redskins to a field goal. So they ended up with a 5-0 score over the Green Bay Packers at the end of the first quarter. But at that point, I mean, really there was virtually possession for Green Bay so far, even in the first quarter. So Green Bay really didn't even get their hands on the ball. Well, no sooner do they do that, but then, you know, you get another Washington series going, and you get yourself, Kirk Cousins stands back there. He fires a laser to Jordan Reed into the end zone for a touchdown. But the point after attempt failed, and suddenly you got 11-0 Redskins. After that, though, it was like the Green Bay Packers, I don't know, it was like they turned on the pissed off zone. And we're not I'm mad as hell and I'm not taking it anymore. And holy smokes, they go 17 unanswered points. Go into halftime, I think it was 17-11, I think at halftime. And it was almost after that that you could feel the entire game just change. It just shifted. And it all went in Green Bay's favor. This has got to be a great feeling game for a Green Bay Packers team that, you know, listen, we weren't the only ones. A lot of people were talking about the fact that, hey, this is a Green Bay team that's 4-6 in their last 10. You know, they had to have gotten tired of hearing it. This had to be a good, good feeling for them, despite the fact it was against, what, the weakest team in the NFC, you know, a 9-7 team. Hey, they had to go to Washington. They had to do what they had to do. They were down early, and they came back, and they won big.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's probably got to be a good confidence builder, and I think Aaron Rodgers is probably the most who benefits from it, because Aaron was taking a lot of slack, and even the first quarter, as you alluded to, you know, he didn't have the greatest start in that game. You know, the Redskins were up 11-0, and it was starting to look like, oh boy, this could be bad. And then, you know, the second quarter rolls around, and all of a sudden it was like somebody, as you said, they flipped the switch, and all of a sudden they were ready to come out and, you know, make a difference. And they did a really good job of that.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron deserves a lot of the credit. I mean, you could clearly see, you know, he was putting the team on his back. He was doing what he had to do, making the passes, taking hits. You know, that offensive line is not the best in football. So, you know,
and it seems
he was
like
doing what he could do.
Seems like we talk about that. It seems like haven't we been talking about their offensive line for the better part of at least, what, two or three seasons now?
Well, between that and their apparent no running game, I mean, the only guy they're handing the ball off to is a wide receiver who's getting any kind of yardage. I mean, Eddie Lacy just looks slow and out of shape, and Starks has a burst every once in a while, but, you know, he's better catching the ball.
Yeah, and
I just think that's a factor of the line not being able to make holes for Lacy or any of them.
The crazy thing was it felt like they were running the ball constantly to Randall Cobb. Didn't it feel that way?
Yep.
But Eddie Lacy had 12 carries for 63 yards. James Starks had 12 carries for 53 yards. And Randall Cobb only had 5 carries for 24. So why did it feel like Randall Cobb constantly, every time I looked up, Randall Cobb had the ball? I don't know.
Well, because he's the only one who is making any positive headway, I think.
I guess. I don't know. But, I mean, at least he had a touchdown. James Starks had a touchdown. So, you know. Aaron Rodgers, though, speaking to him, 21-36, 210 yards for 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, and a 93.5 passer rating. Green Bay heading on to Carolina. Brandon, could we get an upset here? We could get an upset here.
In which game?
They're going to go play Carolina this weekend. I'm sorry, wait a minute. Packers are playing Arizona.
Packers play Arizona. You could see it, but I think you're going to see Arizona prevail.
All right. Arizona might prevail on that one. Okay. All right. Well, I'm just,
I really like all the teams that had the bye. I think that gives the teams, you know, an extra week to get healthy, to prepare. The teams that had to play, you know, are obviously more banged up. I don't see, you know, Green Bay's offensive line being able to do anything with the Arizona defense. Aaron Rodgers better be prepared, because he's going to come out of that game pretty beat up. I don't see any other way. So, it's just the best.
All right. Yeah. So, right. Because the offensive line and the defense will be putting the pressure on them. And they're going to be playing. Arizona. Yeah. Right. All right. Right. So, we'll have to wait and see how that one. We'll see how that plays out. And you know, the line, as we already pointed out, that game's got the biggest line of all of them currently, as it stands right now. Denver 6.5, but Arizona is favored by 7. I think that line will move a little bit as well, but I guess we'll see how that goes. All right. Well, there you go. That's we went through what and I you know, just to kind of end things up here with just a handful of minutes that we've got here, Brandon. At this point right now, only one team of our seven teams that are looking for head coaches has filled their head coaching vacancy, and that's the Miami Dolphins with Adam Gase. All of the other six are still looking. For the most part, I guess the coaching interviews have kind of suspended while the players or while the owners are all together in meetings in, where are they, Houston? I think they're in Houston is where they are, trying to determine who the next teams are going to be in Los Angeles, which we'll be talking about. You can bet that's going to be at one of the big agenda items on our Thursday night program.
Well, the reports right now are coming out that it's actually swaying to a Chargers-Rams combination in the Inglewood site that the Rams owner wants to build. And the Chargers are resisting, but, of course, all the saber-rattling that goes on in the NFL, now the owners are threatening if they don't play ball that maybe they won't get to move at all. So it's almost like the owners are trying to force something that everybody's not going to like. In other words, they're not going to let the Rams go on their own. That's already off the table. They want the Rams and Chargers to both go to the site in Inglewood, apparently. They had 20 of the 24 votes who voted in an early round of voting. Apparently several rounds occur before this is all said and done. I don't think there's any limits on how many times they can vote. But, you know, they do their politicking and negotiating, as they say.
This, however, is going contrary to what the committee had recommended. The committee recommended Chargers and Raiders to the Carson City site.
Correct.
Which is
I think I recommended.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think what's happening here is I think the financial funding for the Inglewood site is much more, in other words, Kroenke's got his ducks in a row a lot more so than the other project. And I think the stability of that project and the money they're going to generate from the relocation fees, I think the NFL is looking at, okay, we'll make them two move and we'll build Oakland a new stadium with the relocation money.
Yeah, well, they better
kind of how it looks like it's playing out.
Well, that, you know, boy,
they're going to subsidize
that's going to be a hell of an investment.
Well, they're saying the relocation fee, you know, for these teams is going to be, you know, probably, you know, high, you know, upwards of like $500 million. So you have that kind of money in there. You never know.
When have we ever seen the NFL make that kind of a commitment, though? That's a hell of a commitment.
Well, I think this is a unique situation in the sense that, you know, you have three teams when they clearly, you know, want two, and at least two of the three have a legit beef that their stadium's bad, and that's the Rams and the Chargers. The Rams guy has kind of forced the issue to the point, Kroenke's kind of forced the issue to the point where, you know, the NFL almost can't leave the Rams in St. Louis now. Yeah. So it's like, you know, what a mess we've made of this for the last, 3 years now. And you know, now we're trying to, you know, squeeze the round peg into the square hole because nobody's happy about it. I don't think the Rams want another team in their stadium. I think he's only agreeing to it because he has no choice.
Well,
you know?
I'll tell you what, it's going to happen. It's going to make for a very, very interesting agenda item on our Frat House Sports Show on Thursday night.
We may have an answer by then. We have an answer by Thursday.
Well, we're going to.
They're saying we could have an answer by Wednesday.
Well, we're not going to have an answer, but we're not going to have an answer in the next 30 seconds. So.
No. Sorry.
10 seconds. You want to be here on Thursday night for our Frat House Sports Show, and it should get lively, I'm sure, because we'll have Sidekick on there, and of course, the St. Louis native that he is, I'm sure he'll have plenty to say. Be here Thursday night, 7 p.m. Eastern time for that one, and then, of course, turn right around and be back here on Saturday afternoon, please, with me for another relaxed Frat House Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. In the meantime, oh my gosh, there's got to be some sports somewhere. Go find some, will you? You know, national championship game over there. Got to be something on. Hockey, I don't know. NBA, maybe? Yeah.